Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show that's part of this complete breakfast. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope,
we don our fatigues and talk G.I. Joe, a couple summer movies are reviewed, and Adam refuses to leave the plane he's trapped on because he's comfy and fears the outside world.
And now, here are your hosts, Jarrett, Adam, and Shane.
And we are back. Summer vacation, although it is in the middle of August, is officially done for your Scope hosts. We've been gone for one solid month, and I think we have a lot to talk about. So it's very exciting to do that.
I hope we do.
Joining us in our conversation today...
My sandwich. Yummy.
Jarrett enjoying a delicious grilled cheese. Would that be made with standard American cheese or some other fancy sort of sliced cheese? Classy.
That's American cheese.
Stay classy, Richfield.
I threw some ham slices in there, too.
Wow, so it's not a traditional grilled cheese sandwich.
No, it's augmented.
So we've got a number of people here. Number being one. Mike, you remember Mike from a few shows back. He came in and gave us his very timely stories about stalking a very young band. You might know them.
Don't be afraid to lean into that mic.
Lean into that mic, Mike. Get right
in
there.
Lean into the mic.
Mike chasing Axl Rose back in the day. Mike, thanks for being here. Mike is one of the foremost experts on the world of G.I. Joe, and we thought it was appropriate since that movie just came out a couple weeks ago, and we thought we would talk about it. Thank you, crowd. And Adam is not here physically, but he is here via the internet. We call it Skyping. Adam, where are you at right now? Please report in.
I feel like I should have something going on behind me in the background.
Like a chopper sound, I think.
Yes.
Are you exactly. Still on the plane?
Right, yes. They still haven't let me off.
Don't step on my stuff, Mike. We'll get to it in a second.
Virginia.
You're out in Virginia?
Virginia.
And you're visiting your mother?
I'm visiting my mother in between working with school district here last week and this coming week.
Well, for people that listen to us in any format, you might know that Adam stopped in on the 0 hour program.
We're on Vital? Or were we on Vinyl or something?
Yeah,
we're
on Vinyl via Skype, and it worked so well that we decided we'd give it a go here. So, Adam, thank you for donning the technological hat, getting on the internet, and joining us for the show.
It's called a headset.
Oh, yeah. Very appreciated. So Mike was teasing something that I was going to introduce. Not often do your Scope hosts impact national and world news, but last week our good friend Adam did so. For those of you that pay attention to the news, you might have read a story about a small plane being trapped in a runway in southern Minnesota for, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 hours. I don't really know the full story.
Whoa. It's a Scoptacular Scopesclusive!
Indeed, and our good friend Adam was on that plane. Adam, could you set up the story for us and give us an insight that we may not have gotten on CNN or MSNBC?
Scope Field Report.
It's a field report.
Or on the early show or the Today Show or the morning
everywhere.
Show. Yeah, everywhere. It was the story of the week.
It really was.
I'm pretty sure it had more buzz than Michael Jackson dying.
Healthcare, schmelthcare.
Exactly.
Adam's
even Dan Barrero got on the action there on our local sports radio show.
I don't know.
I hear Michael Jackson was pretty buzzed when he died.
Okay. Well, I can't compete with that with puns. So I'm just going to give up right now.
Take a
note. No, we need your story.
Mike's got the first crickets of the day. Very nice. Adam, tell us your story. We want to hear it so bad.
All right. I've been telling this all week. So
should be well rehearsed and keep it brief.
This should be very classy.
Okay, so the flight from Houston to Minneapolis on Continental's Express Jet, so like not really Continental, but whatever. It's like two hours and 45-minute long flight, supposed to be. There was really bad storms on Friday night, I guess it was. So we circled the Minneapolis airport for, I don't know, a good 15 minutes once we finally got there, but the storms were too bad. So they were going to run low on fuel or out of fuel, I guess. So they had us land in Rochester to refuel and then try to circle around again.
Mm-hmm.
And once we landed in Rochester, there was another plane, a Northwest plane, that also was kind of in the same condition that we were. So they landed about 5 minutes before us. So we just kind of sat there. Fuel truck came up, I guess refueled, I don't know. And then we just sat there for a little bit. And
they didn't actually refuel. They just exchanged your mama jokes with the flight crew on your plane.
I'll tell you why in a second why I'm not sure that they actually refueled.
Okay.
So we wait a little while, probably 30, 45 minutes, and the pilot comes on, says, we're just waiting for clearance from Minneapolis. The weather's just still bad there, so we'll get off here in a little bit.
You're going to get off?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there wasn't much else to do on that plane. Everyone's batteries on their laptops and iPods and phones had died at this point, so it was frustrating.
47-person circle jerk, as you're saying, is the way to kill time.
Jared is all over the sexual innuendo today.
That's disgusting. Two of them were babies, so it was a 45-person.
Okay. I'm not saying you involve the children. I would never say that.
Why are you winking at me, Jared?
I just know what your evening plans are.
Yikes. Wow. Sickening.
Gross.
Thank you, Adam.
They don't call us the best in the business for nothing, Shane.
Don't call us the best in the business.
They save the time.
Sorry.
Which business?
Sorry, Adam, you were on a plane.
Adam, you're on a plane. Snake's on a plane. Go ahead.
Adam's on a plane. around 2 in the morning, they gave us an update saying, okay, we think we're going to be able to get out of here in just a couple minutes now. But at that point, the Northwest plane in front of us had given up, and they were parking at the gate. So at this point, we're still on the plane. Like, we're not, in the airport waiting around for two hours. We're on the plane. And
What's the attitude on the plane? That's what I want. Right now, 2 a.m., are people frustrated? Are they understanding, considering, it's bad weather and their circumstances beyond their control? What is the attitude, Adam?
Oh, okay. Well, you want me to go through all 47 people and how each person felt individually?
Give me the general take.
What were their motivations?
I think around this point, they were still understanding of what was going on. My biggest issue at this point, honestly, was the fact that, like I said, all my batteries had died.
Yeah.
I can't sleep sitting up, so I would keep doing the your head goes down and then you pops back up thing.
Sure.
Which, by the way, they think is an evolutionary trait from when we were monkeys.
Very interesting. Defense mechanism.
I thought it was more innuendo.
my other big issue was the guy sitting across the aisle from me smelled terribly of BO. Not just after this 5 hour point, but like immediately upon him getting on the plane,
like he's got some sort of genetic funk going on.
It's like that BO that smells like shit.
Yes.
I mean, it's so bad. You're like, this is beyond regular body odor.
Yeah, and I mean, it was an Indian guy, and I know a lot of them just don't use deodorant.
Like
so,
curry?
I mean,
what? so you've got a funk. You can't sleep.
Do you have someone sitting directly next to you at this time?
No, it's one of those planes where on one side it's just single seats, and then on the other side it's double seats.
It's a tiny plane.
I was on the single seat side. And I was in the exit row, and there was no first class in this plane, so I technically had the best seat in the entire plane.
You were king of the plane.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just going to say it now. Adam was king of the plane.
So
nobody's talking about that in the news, but Adam has risen to the top like some sort of escape from New York. He's the king of New York. He's number one.
Phoenix Rising.
Duke of New York.
I've been thinking about
saving
trying
the
to
hot flight attendant.
You're Isaac Hayes at this point.
Right. I've been thinking about trying to go on and get interviews countering this Link Kristen guy that is the only one that's being interviewed.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Some of the things that he's saying are slight exaggerations or maybe massive exaggerations or lies or whatever. But so we'll get to that, I guess.
Okay,
I don't mean to
please.
Take up all this time. Anyway, so at 2 o'clock, the Northwest plane gives up. They park at the gate, they let their people off, and they get a Greyhound. That doesn't come until like 3:30 or something, but that takes them to Minneapolis Airport, because it's like a two and a half hour drive from Rochester, and they get to the so they get home around 6.
So Northwest has some pull, but Continental doesn't. They can get a bus.
Yeah. And so at this point, we keep hearing different things from the pilot's house. Since Continental doesn't operate out of the Rochester Airport, they're not allowed to park at the gate, and
because this is a normal set of circumstances. What the hell?
Right, right. So we're like, all right, that's annoying, but I guess rules is rules, right? Meanwhile, there's a lady who actually lives in Rochester whose husband is at the airport, and they won't let her off the plane. But again, you know, all right, I guess rules are rules, so whatever. All this stuff's going on. So 4 o'clock rolls around. At this point, I'd say the tide has shifted, and people are so getting more and more agitated.
So the bathroom has been used so much now there's actually a tide you have to account for?
Yes, yes, exactly. Every time someone flushes it.
Did you have to use the bathroom or did you hold it the whole time?
I did not. I often tell people about my amazing bladder.
Adam and his amazing bladder.
Right. So the flight took off at 9 in the morning, and I did not use the restroom. I didn't even at the Minneapolis airport. Yeah, so I didn't go to the bathroom for 13 or 14 hours.
Wow. Camel man.
So, yeah.
Just stores it in his hump.
Yeah. So,
that's why he always sits funny when he's here recording
the
show.
Exactly. Yeah, so 4 o'clock comes around and the crew announces, hey, the weather's finally broken, but we passed our allotted time, you know, because pilots are only allowed to fly or whatever, be in cockpits for a specific amount of time, I guess.
That's interesting because the way they have been telling it on the news is that the crew ran out of time in the air, and then, like, the first step was that they had to fly another crew in.
No.
The way you say it, it was different, but it was due to the weight. Hmm.
They had plenty of time, and they kept warning us. They kept saying, you know, we need to try to get out of here because we're going to run out of time at some point, but it wasn't while they were in the air.
Mm. I like how you bring the facts. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
No spin zone here.
For what it's worth, these are the facts that were related to us, so I don't know that they were necessarily the facts, but they're the facts from what we were told.
Well,
so but again, they can't let us off the plane because there's no one supposedly at the terminal to like let us in, and because it's Continental and they don't operate, they're not allowed. So we're like, all right, whatever, this sucks. So 5:30 rolls around, both babies wake up, and the babies were really good, you know, considering, but 5:30 they're both up, and
again the news has reported that the babies were crying the entire time,
all night long.
Yeah, well, okay, one was 3 rows behind me, the other one was, I would think, maybe 5 rows behind me, because I could hear them when they were crying, and
so
they
really
were not crying.
You're being called upon to breastfeed at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do. I
get
try.
The milk but ducks going.
My teat has run dry, unfortunately.
So then they turn it over to Stinky Man?
Exactly. No, they pass them.
And his curry-flavored milk?
The other
coconut
thing about
milk.
Stinky guy is that before the flight took off, 2 people sat next to him and moved to other seats.
Was his name Link Christian?
What? Oh, no. His name was not Link Kristen. No. That would have been good if that was him, though. So 5:30 comes around. Both babies wake up. And at this point, people have kind of given up. They're walking up to the cockpit. And the door's open, which is illegal, I think. But the door's open to the cockpit. So they're walking up there. And like,
rules is rules, though, right?
Right. They're talking to the pilot and the flight attendants. And I think one of the moms is strongly conveying the fact that no one, you know, we can't deal with it anymore. The babies are nonplussed. And
right. Always about the babies. The babies are nonplussed. We're fine, but the babies can't take it anymore.
I can't stand a baby cry, though. So I was like, let's get out of here.
Let's do
it. They announced, like, okay, we're you know, we finally got a hold of someone at the airport. They're going to let us in. And then 45 minutes later, we finally get off the plane. So we get off the plane, and it's so funny. When the pilots and the crew come in, they come into the airport, and they just walk right past all of us, and they're never seen from again.
Really?
So, yeah. That's one of the critiques I've heard, is that the pilots didn't really, like, take any ownership of the situation and communicate to people. They just pretty much ignored you.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was funny. So they're like, we have to wait for another crew. So crew had to be flown down to Rochester specifically just to fly us back. So we, you know, we had to wait for 2.5 hours for that to happen. They gave us free drinks at the restaurant at the airport.
A free soda pop. Like,
free soda or juice or whatever.
Now, did you feel that compensation was enough? Do you think the people should have had a meal too? Or, I mean,
what's an Adam thinking right now? Are you,
as someone who was involved in the situation, I really want that perspective on it.
I think they probably should have forked over the extra $3 or $4 for a meal or whatever. But from what I understood, that wasn't Continental that gave us that. That was the airport that was giving us the free.
Wow. Continental's not coming out too sweet on this one.
Are you at this point?
No Continental breakfast.
Never. Are you ever getting to the point?
Mike has made amends.
Yeah.
He gets that.
I mean, Adam, I've been in funny plane situations where things just cascade and just get worse and worse and worse as you go. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, when I was in those situations, to kind of just laugh it off. You know, like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, just yet another thing that stacks on. Were you that way, or were you kind of angry or going with the flow at that time?
I was mostly finding the humor in it, but at a certain point, I kind of felt like I might just start screaming at some point.
Sure.
Like, not like, because I've like lost control because I've been up because I can't, like I said, I can't sleep. I had gotten up around 6:30 Eastern time, so it was, you know, I'd been up by the time I went to bed, I had been up for like 29 straight hours. And I used to work an overnight shift, and I know what happens to me after I go 24 hours without sleep. I start to kind of like hear chimes, and I start to see stars. I know. So like, I kind of felt like I was going to nearly lose control. Not like, you know, flip out, but like, just like, I don't know. But then I like looked around and I was like, all right, if these assholes are keeping it together, I can too. So.
Note to you, Jared, at some point you need to find chime sound effects so we can just torture Adam throughout the shows. Just people at chime. Adam be like, am I getting enough sleep? What's going on here?
Yeah. So, and that was the other thing. Like, I knew like once I finally got to the Minneapolis airport, I was going to have to drive home, and I was like, this is going to be safe.
Yeah.
No kidding.
To be weaving.
So, so we wait around. The crew actually gets there pretty quickly, but then there's this whole thing where they've got to do paperwork. And so then one of the workers at the airport comes on the overhead, and he's like, Continental flight, whatever, passengers, just so you know what's going on. The crew needs to refuel the plane, both planes, because, you know, the one that just flew in just to drop off this crew. But, you know, we're waiting for confirmation at Continental for payment of it because they don't fly in and out of this airport. And he says all these things, and I'm like, wait, so what happened last night? Did they not really refuel last night? Because, like, what about this whole payment thing last time?
Yeah.
So I didn't really understand what the deal there was. But that literally took, like, 90 minutes to get sorted out.
Oh, my God.
And so, like, we're standing here just, like, looking at these two planes sitting right outside. And we're like, can we get on one of them soon, now? So finally,
anything?
at 8:30 or something, they finally board us. And we fly home. And as soon as everyone gets off the plane, of course, everyone stops at the gate, the Continental gate, to yell at the ticket, the gate agent.
Yeah.
Like, it's their fault.
Yeah.
Well, A, like, it's their fault. B, like, they can do anything. And C, like, this has been like a 13-hour ordeal. Let's go home. I'm like tired. I just walk right past it. And I'm like, you know what? If they get compensation and I miss out on it because I went home, then fine. Like, I deal with it. So I get home and later find out that my manager was actually on that Northwest flight that landed in front of us at Rochester. She sent an email out to all the trainers and she was like, hey, did anyone else, you know, have any weird, crazy stuff happen on,
it's
on Friday
funny
night?
You mentioned it.
Here's what happened to me. Yeah, so like, she had to do that. One of the other trainers, they had to divert to Fargo for a little bit, and then they flew into Minneapolis. And I was like, well, let me tell you. So
let me tell you my story.
And then just repeated the exact story you just told us.
Yes.
So what's
I said the funny stuff for you guys, so don't worry.
Thank you.
You laughed it up a little bit. So what's the takeaway on this? Where do we stand now? Are you involved in some sort of large lawsuit to get something out of this? Where do we stand?
No one's contacted me. Continental sent everyone the following package: a full refund for the ticket, which of course I don't get because it was a work paid for ticket. Yep. So I'm missing out on that.
Yeah, that sucks. I'm sure you're not the only one who's actually getting any direct compensation.
Oh, definitely. $200 voucher for a future Continental flight.
$200.
Yeah, which doesn't pay for a whole ticket, so that kind of frustrates me. You know, it'd be really hard to find a $200 ticket. Most tickets are going to be in the mid 200s to, you know, and up.
Yeah.
And a $50 American Express gift card. to be used anywhere. American Express.
And where are you going to spend? What are you going to spend that on? That's what we really want to know.
And their sincere apology. Well, I'm not going to spend any of it until I find out if there's some larger compensation to be awarded to, you know, people that complain more. Like, I mean, I'm not going to do anything. Like, they didn't, you know, legally have to get anything.
If a sudden windfall comes your way.
I like that smart. It's kind of the Jewish attitude in Adam coming out, making sure that he's keeping all of his ducks in a line for this. I like it.
Now, I think you should have gotten compensated like the Oceanic 6 did, and that is free air travel anywhere continental flies.
Forever.
Forever. But I'm a dreamer.
Jared is a dreamer. Well, Adam, I speak for two of us here when I say thank you very much for coming out of this safely.
Fuck you, Mike.
Wow. I know it's Mike. He's been rolling his eyes the whole time.
Before we end this topic, are there any more mistruths that have been reported in the news that you want to debunk right here?
Yes,
exclusively.
Yes,
anything about like gremlins on the wings, that sort of thing?
No, Link Kristen says that we weren't offered food or drink the whole time we were waiting, which is a complete lie. The flight attendant asked us repeatedly. She'd walk up and down the aisle asking if anyone wanted anything to drink. And, I mean, the only food they had on the plane was pretzels. But
right. So it's not like when people were only offered pretzels, it's not as if there was like a buffet table somewhere that they were just not being allowed access to.
Right.
All the flight attendants are eating prime rib.
I mean, this is a regional commuter plane. This isn't like it's going to have a full meal on it.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So that bothered me.
Yeah, that was the big thing. Like, I didn't want anything to drink because I knew I'd have to use the bathroom, which I didn't want to go into. So I turned it down. But
was the bathroom as foul as people had reported?
I wasn't sitting in the back, so okay. I can't say. I mean,
that's right. You were king of the plane.
Right. The only thing I ever heard about it was before we finally reboarded from Rochester, whoever was announcing this said use the restrooms here at the airport first because the toilet's full and they haven't vacuumed it, whatever they do at the airport, which people were annoyed with. And which that Link Kristen guy made comment of, but it's like, okay, did we want to wait another 30 minutes for them to evacuate the toilet?
Yeah.
Or can we hold it for our 19-minute flight?
GTFO is what I would say. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, you telling the story, Adam, and then what we see in the news makes me wonder just how many news stories are inaccurate.
Yeah, well, I mean, every time I've seen it, like they get the times all wrong. Like people, they're like, you know, it was a 16-hour ordeal and everything. Like, I mean, it was a shitty thing, and you know, like a week afterwards, you know, like I'm obviously not, you know, impaired or whatever by anything and all that, but like, yeah,
you're young,
they're
virile.
Right. They definitely conflated a lot of the numbers and things to make it sound a little like nightmare in the sky.
It's too bad. It's too bad we didn't have a batch of Italian tourists that could shoot cell phone video of the entire ordeal, so we could have the truth about what happened.
And then Jared ends the story with a nice classy little air tragedy joke. Adam, let me speak.
I just want truth, Shane. I just want truth.
I understand, Adam. I mean, I'm glad that you're safe. You are a super talent. Especially in the world of podcasting, and we would be very sad if a foul, stinking bathroom would ruin your abilities anyway. So,
yeah, I would like to say that any lawyers out there that want to represent me, you know where to contact me. Apparently on CNN there was some guy saying, like, don't accept anything, we'll sue on your behalf for wrongful imprisonment. And I was like, really? That seems a little excessive.
I like that.
I have to say Dan Barrera was a little bit on the wrongful imprisonment bandwagon there. But,
really?
Yeah.
Maybe you need to call up Dan Barrero, Adam, and give him your story. Tell him to chillax.
His face scares me too much.
Does, the Uncle Fester of local sports radio.
You can't make it up.
Well, Adam, we don't normally talk about common events or current events, and we're going to stop that right now.
You guys know I wasn't really on that plane, right?
Yeah.
That's
the joke. The joke is on us. So, everybody, we are focusing our laser-like attention on the world of G.I. Joe. A couple weeks ago, the eagerly awaited G.I. Joe movie came out, and we're going to be talking about that today. Before we get to the review, however, we're going to do a little G.I. Joe trivia and maybe talk about some G.I. Joe experiences. So it's going to be really a lame, nerdy type of show, just like we do every show. So I think that's great.
Word up.
We'll also be doing a quick review of the sci-fi thriller. That's what I said, sci-fi thriller District 9. It's getting a lot of buzz, and Jared and I will tell you if it's worth your time to go see that. So guess what? I think this is episode 80. Jared, is it not?
We're at 78, Shane.
We are at 78.
Where did you get 80?
I thought we were at...
That's the first time you've done a two-episode jump on it.
I've been on vacation, so I figured you probably did a couple shows while I was gone. So episode 78, my friends, with Adam calling in live from Virginia.
It's 122, Shane. We're way up there.
Live from Virginia right after this. Stick around.
Hi, Jesse Thorne here, host and producer of The Sound of Young America. Our show's been such a successful podcast that some people don't know that it's also a nationally syndicated public radio program. With that in mind, I make sure to approach my interviews with the dispassionate objectivity that's expected of all good public radio journalism. Like when I spoke with the writers of The Late Show with David Letterman. I've been thinking a lot lately, probably too much, about a bit called How Many Spider-Mans Fit in a Jamba Juice.
Right. We really don't have time to deal with... what that reflects in you, that you've been thinking about that a lot.
Check out The Sound of Young America and a whole bunch of other podcasts at MaximumFun.org.
Yo, yo!
We'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe against Cobra and Destro, fighting to save the day. He never gives up, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe.
I just want to thank Jared for faithfully recreating that theme by hand from scratch. You did a great job, and you sort of dated it with a little bit of fuzz in the background. That was very impressive.
It's created with pieces of parchment that I tore up by hand and then scraped along a table's edge.
Nice.
And then I did some manipulations on the computer.
And don't forget about auto-tune. That you put that in there.
I auto-tuned it, yeah.
So, yes, today our focus is all on G.I. Joe. The myth, the toy line, the comic books, the cartoon, it's everything. I brought in a ringer. Really, it's Mike. Not only does he know about Axl Rose and Slash, but he knows everything about G.I. Joe.
It's all about the 80s.
Talking to that Mike there, Mike.
Look at him. He's all like comfortable. Would you rather be on the couch?
Mike's lounging like that Burt Reynolds picture in Cosmopolitan. He's got a bearskin rug and nice hairy chest.
Thank you.
So, Mike, I'm looking at my notes right here, and I've got some questions about G.I. Joe. Mike, tell me when you first started with the whole G.I. Joe experience. Is it true that it started before the 80s?
It is true.
It is true. Like, I didn't know.
I received my first G.I. Joe when I was 3 years old.
What year was that?
That was 1973. And
interestingly enough, that G.I. Joe was the same size as Mike.
It probably wasn't that.
Adam, long. Adam, in 1973, how old were you, by the way?
-7.
He was -7.
That was the year I was born, too.
Nice. So, to explain to all of our listeners what the difference really is between the G.I. Joes that kids nowadays play with versus what you played with back in the Stone Ages.
Nowadays?
Yes. Starting in the 80s, let's say that. There's two distinct lines. Am I correct in saying that?
There's lots of distinct lines, but...
Those are the two major ones.
Mike's getting all defensive now.
I'm not getting defensive.
Were they made of stone back then?
No, they were not made of stone. But
linseed oil, Shane. Linseed oil.
I don't even know what that is, but I love it.
But okay, they basically all had the same head mold and were 12 inches tall.
And so back in the days, they didn't have characters like Snake Eyes and Major Blood and things like that. It was very specialized.
It was just, the first ones were military. Mm-hmm. So they had sailors, pilots, etc.
Sure.
And then they had the Adventure Team, which is the closest thing they had to actual characters back in the 70s, where they had the distinct characters Air Adventurer, Sea Adventurer, Land Adventurer, and the politically correct Black Adventurer.
So he adventures on the black? I don't get it.
That's my understanding. All I know is that in all the commercials, he was the guy in the background holding the pickaxe and so forth.
There we go. Carrying the packs.
Wow.
So do they always have like the flocked hair, that fuzzy hair that you see, and kung fu grip and things like that?
Nope. First ones had painted hair and plastic hands.
And let's say if you had some of these toys today, what would they be worth, do you think?
A lot less than they were before eBay.
There we go. eBay ruins everything, Adam. Absolutely everything. So So, Mike, these went on till what year? When did they stop making these tall G.I. Joes?
They stopped in 76 or 77.
Okay.
So you only had a few short years with them.
Yeah. You love these things, but it was just a real compressed time, right?
That is true.
Very nice. So in, was it 1983 or so, G.I. Joe was reborn as a real American, the line, the real American hero, and they were 3 3/4 action figures.
Yes.
Similar, you being a purist.
Similar to the Star Wars figure line that killed the original G.I. Joe.
Yes. They were going to try to take back their world. You being at this age, how old were you in 83? Like
13.
13. What did you think of this time? Were you all into those G.I. Joes, or were you just angered, or were you too busy chasing girls and playing guitar?
Right. Being a nerd, first of all, I'm going to point out it was 82 when I was 12. Was
82? Wow.
Wow.
Shane, you got me.
Come on, Shane.
Luckily, that's not one of my trivia questions.
Yeah. No, I thought they were cool early on and picked up a few figures as soon as I saw them in the store.
And were you angered that they didn't have a figure like Black Adventurer, or did you think it was cool that they gave them names and gave them distinct personalities and specialties?
I thought it was cool, but at first I thought the ones with beards, because there were three characters with beards in the first line, I thought those were supposed to be the Adventure Team characters.
Oh. See, now when I started buying those G.I. Joes, I was pretty young. I was 8 or so, or my parents were buying them for me. And I kind of knew of this world of G.I. Joe. I had an aunt who had some older kids who played with the tall ones. And I was always confused because I was looking for the leader, G.I. Joe. But so you'd go to the store and you'd see all these characters named Breaker and Short Fuse and Grunt. And I didn't realize that it was a team that was named G.I. Joe. And I think that I pretended for a long time that Breaker, even though he did not come with a gun, was the leader of G.I. Joe. I didn't really understand the concept.
Wow.
What about you, Jared? Did you get into Joe's right away?
I did not get in right away. I was probably the third series of figures that came out when I first started getting into it. And it was, you know, at that point I had seen the comic, I had seen the cartoon, and that's sort of got me into it. The first one I got was Alpine.
Oh, that was
sad. I bought. Wow. So it was a lot later. I mean, they had the nodding heads at that point, you know, the heads with the ball joints, so they could go all over the place. And I got him because he had the most accessories.
Very nice.
And I was very wanted value for my hard-earned paper route money at that point.
And so. You didn't see color, and that's what I like about it.
Right.
Adam, you were 2 when G.I. Joe came out. I'm sure we talked about this before, but where do you stand on that? Did you buy them at all?
I'm very pro G.I. Joe, sure.
Very nice. you were more Joe? Were you more like a
pro
teenage,
Joe?
A Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle kind of guy, or what?
Yeah. I was, both.
You liked them all.
I had lots of both of them. I never had, obviously, as a kid, the ultimate toy that I wanted was that, the aircraft carrier, the one that was as big as a table, the G.I. Joe one.
The flag, it was called.
Yes, and never had that.
Mike, did you have the flag?
I did not. That came out kind of around the time that I was getting out of it and taking an interest in girls.
Very nice. And that definitely would not be, to get that would not be the route to getting all the ladies. Yeah. Unless you banged them on the aircraft carrier, which I probably would have done because I was quite the Lothario back in the day. Jared mentioned comic books. Who here collected the comic books? I know I did.
I did for a short while. Not forever.
Did you back in those days, Adam, were you into comic books? I know a lot of people weren't.
No.
Never. Now you are. You've grown up. And Mike, did you get the G.I. Joe comic books?
Sporadically. Yeah, I got a couple issues here and there.
But not a big thing. And then what about the cartoon? Everybody watched that. And I'm going to throw this out there. Just a couple weeks ago, the complete series was re-released on DVD, and you can also buy them piece by piece. I'm wondering if any of you guys have seen any of that stuff or seen episodes of the cartoon recently, and do they just not hold up as well as some other cartoons? Because I think they don't. I think that they're kind of a kitsch kind of thing, but really overall, you know, it is what it is. It's an 80s cartoon that was kind of cool. But
yeah. My favorite characters, what was his name? Casey Kelp. He was pretty good.
What? Casey Kelp? What are you talking? Has that stick?
You're more of a Tudor fan?
Are you on a different podcast?
Have you gone to sleep since the plane?
Play some chimes.
we're talking about the Snorks, right?
Yes, the Snorks.
Never watched. Oh, chimes. There we go.
That's not at all what those chimes sound like.
We have to get together with Jared and create some chimes, some sleeplessness chimes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. This thing is totally going down the crapper. One last thing before we get into the trivia questions, because Adam's story about the plane took about 14 hours, and we want to make sure we have a timely show. But recently, Jared was involved in the Spiel Bay production.
All right.
For those of you that follow the show, you remember that friend of the show, Earl and John, a few years back, did some Spiel Bay shorts lampooning the original Transformers theatrical film, and not too long ago they decided to come back and attack G.I. Joe with some spoofs on the public service announcements that often actually I think they followed every single G.I. Joe cartoon, where they would teach you not to talk to strangers or not to jump your bike over electrical wires. Jared,
and that girls can actually do things too.
That's right. So tell me about this process. How did you get involved in this, and how did they convince you to sport a mustache or a moustache for your role?
I mean, I got involved in it because I'm friends with them, and
they didn't know you for your talent somewhere on the. That was just a nice byproduct.
I just joined the crew as someone to lend a hand, and they used my camera and my fancy microphone, and my tripod and the headphones
and your image,
and I created the logo animation at the end, and so I guess I did a lot.
So what did they do? That's what I want to know.
Oh, they wrote it and they acted in it too, and Earl wrangled up the child actors to perform in it and stuff like that. So as far as wanting to sport a mustache, I had been just kind of growing a beard for 2 months prior to that, and I was ready to get rid of it. I was kind of done with it, and I held on to it long enough because I wasn't sure if I was a mustached person was going to be required for the shoot. And then somehow Earl decided that I could probably pull off a Wild Bill character, Wild Bill being the helicopter pilot in G.I. Joe. And he's a Southern gentleman who has a mustache and aviator shades.
And a vest.
And a vest.
And tell me about you. Tell me a funny little anecdote of that vest. Probably didn't fit quite as well as it needed to.
The vest was small on Earl. And Earl is not the tallest person.
Yeah, he's like 4'1", 4'2", and
so as Earl is pitching this to me, he's like, "Oh, hey, you want to do Wild Bill?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure."
That's not how he sounds. Hey, want to do Wild Bill?
So he asked me if I would do it, and I said, "Sure, I'll do it." He said, "Okay, I have this vest that should fit." I remember it being kind of big. I'm like, "Okay." Day of the shoot, I ask him where the vest is, and he says, it's in that bag over there. It's a little smaller than I remember. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great.
It belongs to my child.
So this vest basically, not only am I taller than Earl, I'm a little larger than Earl. So I could get this thing over my shoulders, but that was about it. The shots in the video are chest and up, so it doesn't look that silly, I guess. But
giant man in tiny clothes. You look like the Hulk bursting out of your clothes.
Pretty much how I felt, so.
So was there any attempt to get a U.S. Cavalry hat for Wild Bill?
I don't think so. And the video we were lampooning was one where he actually comes in on a motorcycle, so it would have been more appropriate to have a motorcycle helmet to take off. But
did you come in on a motorcycle?
Neither. No, I just kind of walked into frame.
Jared doesn't need any stinking props, Mike.
I just walk in and go, who was that?
Adam, have you seen the new Spiel Bay shorts?
No, because Virginia doesn't have internet, apparently.
Oh, wow.
How are you in West Virginia?
No, but my hotel, it's been incredibly slow. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned how I quit playing WoW, but like...
No, you didn't. That's huge news.
Yeah, so it's good timing because I wouldn't have been able to play anyway.
Why did you quit? I know this is totally out of the G.I. Joe realm, but we need to know this.
Because I wanted to play the G.I. Joe game instead. I can only play one game at a time.
Very nice. You did get an Xbox recently, so that's good.
It's good for who?
I wore a mustache for 6 hours. Why are you getting so off topic?
I don't know. I just love it. I love talking about Adam.
So I wore the mustache for 6 hours. It was shaved off immediately after I got home, but not before I took a bunch of pictures. Angie's not too happy about the pictures that they exist.
I have to ask you, will you ever grow a mustache again?
Hell no.
What was so bad about a mustache?
It was just, it looks creepy. Sorry.
I kind of like it.
No, it was creepy. And it was weird
because...
Do
you feel like people like kind of look at you like, wow.
Yeah, why is he wearing a mustache?
This is the funny... I did look like a cop. This is the funny thing. It's like, so I shaved it that morning. And to me, it didn't feel like I had lost anything because the thing that always bothered me was the tickling on the upper lip from the whiskers. And I still had the mustache, so that was still there. Yeah, and that was weird. But then nobody really looked at me weird on the set, as it were.
Yeah.
However, Earl and I went to Denny's for lunch after the shoot, and I got a few odd looks my direction. Yeah, as
that's
I was
because you're storing extra food in your mustache. You'd get like an omelet for later.
It wasn't quite that big, Shane.
Oh, darn.
So, your attempts to disparage me will not work.
I'm not disparaging you.
So you weren't stylish enough for Denny's.
Apparently not.
Couldn't get beyond the velvet rope.
No. So anyway, as soon as I got home, I got rid of it.
And that's that. That's the end of the mustache story.
Their photos are there to document the mustache existed, but that's probably the only time I'll ever have one.
Adams also donned a mustache for a costume when he was a Magnum PI a few years back.
And the next year when I was Gallagher.
Oh, that's right. Even better.
Yeah, but wearing a fake mustache and growing one is a completely different thing.
No, I grew it.
Oh, did you? Oh, awesome.
Yes. He commits to the role.
That's good.
So, and then I also had the Secret Mustache Society at work.
He's very sneaky, this character. So, last question. If you had a G.I. Joe codename, Mike, what would it be?
Short Fuse.
Short Fuse? I was thinking Toots, because I've been with you after some crazy drinking and eating. That's what I would say. Adam, do you have a G.I. Joe nickname that you'd like to share with us, or is this just completely off the rails?
Serpentor?
Dr. Mindbender. That's who you'd be. So, listen, guys. I've got 15 G.I. Joe trivia questions based on comic book, cartoon, and toy. And I'm just going to read them off, Jared. And anybody can kind of play. I don't really have a game involved in this because I don't know who would actually know. So let's just start with comic trivia. I bet you Mike might be the guy that can nail most of these. So I'll sort of put it in his world first to see if he can get this stuff right.
All right.
So question one, if you do know it, and Mike doesn't, sure, feel free to chime in.
So we have to defer to Mike?
No, whatever. We'll figure it out. The premise for G.I. Joe, the comic book, was originally pitched by Larry Hama for a completely different comic. Name the famous Marvel character that the premise originally featured. Mike shaking his head like he knows. I'm going to let Jared or Adam try to knock this one out of the park first.
Not a clue.
Adam?
Captain America?
Probably would have been like Nick Fury, wouldn't it?
You're correct. Mm-hmm. The comic would have been called Fury Force and would feature Nick Fury and his son as they go out and battle Hydra. So
This game is too hard.
It is.
Yeah.
Name the comic book companies that have published modern G.I. Joe adventures. There are...
Image?
Yeah, that's one.
Marvel.
That's two.
Devil's Due.
That's three.
I'm trying to think who's publishing it now.
Yep, that's a key.
I don't know.
Anyone? IDW?
Yeah, I was going to say...
There was an I something.
I knew it was three initials.
There's one other one that I'm sure Mike even has comics from this company.
Dark Horse?
No. Who would you say, Jared?
Dark Horse?
Dark Horse, yes.
Really?
And there's one extra point. This comic book company published G.I. Joe, I believe it was How to Draw G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe Adventures in 3D. That company was called Blackthorn.
Never heard of them.
Nope.
Guys, who killed Snake Eyes' trainer, the Hard Master?
Zartan.
Correct.
Hmm.
What was the name?
People never died in G.I. Joe.
Yeah,
none. They did in the comic.
Eventually, they would die in the comic.
There was a comic?
Yeah, that's amazing. What was the name and number of the first classic G.I. Joe comic that featured Snake Eyes, his infiltration of a Cobra base, and absolutely no text or words? It's a classic issue, Mike.
And you're looking for the issue number?
Issue number and the name of the issue. Anyone that's worth their salt might know that. Jared does not know?
No. I want to say like issue 30 or something, but I don't know.
You're close.
Yeah.
The answer is issue 21, and the issue is called Silent Interlude. It was written and drawn by Larry Hama. Finally, what was Cobra Commander's occupation before he became a super terrorist?
Used car salesman.
So he was not a doctor or related to the Baroness in any way. Let's go on to cartoon trivia, Jared. The first G.I. Joe miniseries...
Wait, can I ask what his motivation was?
Yeah, how did he make that transition?
Well,
to
he was just a lot of bad things happened to him. It was sort of life piling on him, and he wanted to get back at the government, sort of putting the man down, sort of thing. So that was really his motivation.
Obama right now might be spawning thousands of Cobra Commanders.
I would say it's very likely.
Yep.
interesting.
Look for Rachel Maddow to cover that next week.
Absolutely. She listens
so he
to
has,
that.
He has a dumb origin story, just like the Joker, and if the Joker really is that red mask guy or whatever that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that initially they didn't really get into that sort of thing. I think as the comic kind of kept going on, they needed to give answers to some of that. So his origin was a little lame. Later on, when Devils Do took over the comic, they tried to toughen it up a little bit, you know, grunge it up a little bit and make it more palatable to modern-day audiences. And some people say they're successful. Some don't. And as you can see, they don't have the comic anymore. So I think that speaks for itself. But going on to the cartoon trivia, the first G.I. Joe miniseries featured a super weapon called the Mass Device. What three rare elements were needed to power it?
Oh. I think heavy water was one.
That's correct.
A G.I. Joe fan that had sex.
I have no idea what the other ones were.
Radioactive crystals that Snake Eyes got and he turned them red. And then fragments from a giant meteorite. Those are it. In the G.I. Joe cartoon movie, who voiced Globulus or Globulus? Famous actor?
Nicolas Cage?
Nope. Mike?
No idea.
Adam, you know a lot of things. Any guesses?
I'm seeing if Wikipedia will tell me.
Leonard Nimoy?
That's closer. Burgess Meredith.
Who's that?
He was Rocky's trainer. He was in Grumpy Old Men. The voice of Shipwreck was based on what famous actor, Mike?
Earl?
Yes, very famous. Jared, any guesses?
No.
Adam?
Yes, I do. I have a guess.
What's your guess? Or are you just going to cheat the whole time? The answer is Jack.
Burgess Meredith.
Jack Nicholson. Okay. Jack Nicholson. What was the name of the company that produced the G.I. Joe cartoon? You saw it at the beginning and end of every episode.
Dick.
Is it like Sunbow or
Sunbow?
Correct, Sunbow. Sunbow. And finally, Adam, if knowing is half the battle, what's the other? What's the other half?
Using deodorant.
Using deodorant, exactly. Telling the truth when you're talking about your plane being stranded.
Red and blue lasers.
That's exactly it. Dang. Toy trivia, Mike. How many Joes were in the original team? The 1982 team.
I believe it was 12.
I had to count at 13.
Hmm.
The original 13.
We'll split it.
Name all the female characters made into action figures. There were five.
Joe and Cobra or just Joe?
All female figures. Joe and Cobra.
Scarlet.
Ding. Yep.
Lady J.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, there's six. I'm
sorry. Baroness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Zarana.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Jinx.
You're missing one.
You said there were five.
That was five.
I said six. I'm sorry. I changed it. One more.
Okay. I don't know.
There's Munisha who just came out.
Nope. You missed her. She came out in the second line.
Oh, Cover Girl.
Cover Girl. There we go. Very good.
Munisha doesn't count?
No. What celebrity was almost made into a G.I. Joe action figure, but was canceled when Hasbro couldn't get the rights to his likeness?
Sergeant Slaughter.
Not Sergeant Slaughter.
Michael Douglas.
Not Michael Douglas. He was featured in the G.I. Joe Order of Battle comic book as well. That was the only time you ever saw him.
Hmm.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
You're in the right.
Oh, was
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Roddy Piper?
Nope. The correct answer.
Carl Weathers.
The correct answer is Rocky Balboa. Sly Stallone was going to be made as a figure. They couldn't get his rights. And a remnant of that is there was a Cobra guy named Big Boa who was kind of a boxer slash trainer. He was to be his nemesis.
Okay.
Here we go. Which dreadnought was packaged with a brown boar accessory, Mike?
Brown boar accessory. Oh.
Naga hide or something?
Correct.
What?
Very nice, Mike.
I don't know that one.
Finally, how many versions of Snake Eyes were released in the original Real American Hero line?
28.
Oh. Less than you would think?
Four.
Jared's in the ballpark.
More than that. I think it's five.
I've got six. Let's go over them. The original.
Yep.
The one with the wolf, which is the classic. Everyone likes that one. There's the one with the blowgun and silver goggles. There's the guy with the red goggles, who's red, white, or red, black, and blue. Mm-hmm. There's a Ninja Force, and then there's a Shadow Ninja version. So six. There we go. That's our trivia.
Probably too many.
They could have done two and been good with that. Adam, did you have any Snake Eyes action figures? Because I know that the one with the wolf was my absolute favorite.
I don't think I had any.
I still like the original.
For the 3¾ line, what was the origin of that idea? Was it Hasbro that came up with it? Was it the comic books that came up with it? Which came first?
It was Hasbro, because they brought the idea to Marvel Comics, saying they wanted a comic to support it. And that's when they fished Larry Hama's script out of the trash.
Ah.
Pretty cutting edge for the time, where they're actually merging comics, action figures, and eventually cartoons together. I think they had to loosen some standards in terms of, you know, how they can advertise to children and tie that stuff together. But really, it captured a nation, didn't it?
Captured a nation.
So guess what, guys? This is part.
No nation was ever captured on that show.
Let's keep talking about G.I. Joe after the break. We've got a review of the movie, but I think there's one thing we need to do first, Jared.
What's that?
And that's play some music. So let's get out of the break, and we'll come back to you.
It's time to bust a move with Scope Sounds, the Scope Song of the Week. Drop that beat, homie.
There we go. Now I can talk. Hey, this one made the rounds on the internet this week. It's the Ballad of G.I. Joe. You can see it over on Funny or Die. Here you go.
Two forces waging endless war. Every day they waste more. But when the day is done and they go home, what do they do for fun? Night falls on G.I. Joe headquarters. Shipwreck just got season one of the Wonder Years. Doc is reading Dostoevsky. It's no job's drinking beer. I heard he likes to drink quite a bit. Snake Eyes is painting landscapes. It makes him feel at peace. His latest is a series of sunsets on the beach. And Scarlet lies awake and wonders, will Duke still love me when I'm old? I see the way he looks at Lady J. Someday he's gonna leave me in the cold. No, dude, don't go. Night falls on the Cobra Pterodrome. Storm shadows taking out the trash. Tomax is boosting Zaymot's wallet. He needs the extra cash. Cobra Commander loves 70s boogie, and he's a big fan of Three Dog Night.
One is the loneliest number.
When he takes over the world, the first thing he'll do is make him reunite. And Zartan sits up late and wonders,
I wonder
who is the real me? And in the end, do I really have any friends? Love me for being Zartan. Love me for being me.
Destro,
Destro,
Destro and the Baroness, Destro and the Baroness, practicing the clarinet. Destro and the Baroness, practicing the clarinet, practicing the clarinet, practicing the clarinet.
Jogging on his ham radio. His best friend is some guy he doesn't even know. If things could always be this way, wouldn't that be nice? But no dice.
No, 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 no.
Cobra's got the mass device.
Help! Please! They've locked me in a box!
Under the scope. We're back with Under the Scope. It's three parts, always presented in the same exact order, Adam. And the first order of business today is news. Adam doing news on location in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Adam, please read them like you've never read them before.
Okay.
That's good.
You guys are okay with me doing Virginia-specific stories all of our Virginia fans.
I think that's what we would expect.
Okay. So you want – okay. So just so everyone knows, Shane requested that we do a story on – let's see. John. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Two stories I request.
On cockfighting.
Two stories.
Very strange.
On cockfighting.
First
and just
story.
Cops.
Just so everyone knows, John Holmes passed away earlier. John Holmes was known for
what?
I don't, this is really weird that you wanted me to get this. That's for his exceptional.
No, I wanted you to send pictures of him to me.
I was the G.I. Joe expert.
Holmes was the subject of several books, like the essay in Rolling Stone. And, all right, so this is pretty funny. All right, anyway.
Good stuff.
Okay, so John Hughes passed away this past couple weeks. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's some guy.
Some guy. What a loving tribute.
He was only the voice of 80s cinema.
I really liked, there's this piece that A.O. Scott did in the New York Times, or A.O. Scott, as I like to call him. So I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs because I kind of like it. And it mentions Curly Sue, which I love to talk about. So
who does?
Yeah. A.O. Scott says, I've reached an age where my children sometimes ask, Dad, what were things like in the olden days when you were a teenager? They mean the 80s, and it's not so easy to explain. The ancient past never is. But in a pinch, I can turn to The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. The haircuts, the music, the clothes, it's all there. And also something of the buoyancy and confusion of being young in those days, when VCRs were still a novelty and vinyl records were not yet obsolete, when text was not a verb and the potential of the internet was something not even the nerds of Weird Science could intuit. John Hughes, who died on Thursday at the age of 59, directed only 8 films, of which the 4 I mentioned were the best. But his last, Curly Sue, belonged to the 80s, a decade in which Mr. Hughes was also busy as a producer, a screenwriter, and the pop culture embodiment of the age. So
wow.
There you go.
Very nice read. I pulled a few clips. Jared, if you just want to hit some, we've got some from his some of his best movies. Is there anything that strikes you right away you want to play, Jared? Maybe something from 16 Candles?
I didn't even listen to him.
Okay, just hit, no, just start hit. They're really short, so this will just spur our memories.
Anything bigger than a handful, you're risking a sprained
toe. Yeah, that's the worst one.
I can't even understand what he's saying.
That was the worst one. That was from Weird Science talking about the lovely tatas of Miss Kelly LeBrock.
I thought it was from a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Anything bigger than a handful, you're risking a sprained thumb.
Yeah, that's a like
you're risking a sprained thumb.
That's right. What else we got?
Oh, no more Yankee, my wanky. The donga need food.
We love it. Lovingly racist back in those days. John Hughes got away with it. What else we got?
This.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah.
Ruckus.
And from The Breakfast Club. And finally, my favorite John Hughes film, which I don't know why people don't give this one more credit than it. It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Rooney, I don't have all day to bark at you, so I'm going to make this short and sweet. I want my daughter out in front of the school in 10 minutes by herself. I don't want anybody...
What? It's too suspicious. He'll think something's up. Cover it.
Rooney! Rooney! Yes, yes. I changed my mind. I want you out in front of the school with her. I'd like to have a few words with you. On second thought, we don't have time to talk right now. We'll get together soon and we'll have lunch. Ow!
I love that. Rooney! So, Jared's favorite Hughes movie is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mike, do you have a favorite? I mean, you probably could appreciate even slightly more than us. You were a little bit older when they came out, so you could even see some of them in the theaters. So,
You know, I think I'd have to go with 16 Candles.
Kind of a classic, the classic teen romp. Yeah. Did you have a hard-on for Molly Ringwald like everybody else seemed to at that time, or do you think she was sort of homely?
No, I thought she was kind of homely.
Yeah, and Adam, you're the youngest of the bunch. Do these John Hughes movies have any resonance with you at all in your life? Or
do we get to count Home Alone?
I didn't
direct it, so no.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can count it, but I'm
not serious. I mean, probably Weird Science and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, we're talking about the TV show, Weird Science.
Did you say
the TV show? Yeah, I was a little...
Both of them had very successful TV shows.
I don't think I ever saw John Hughes. I saw his four main films, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, and Weird Science. I never saw any of those in the theaters. I watched them on HBO over and over and over again.
Same here.
And I
still have never seen Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, Pretty in Pink... that's my wife's favorite one by far.
Was Say Anything his?
Yes.
Or is it just okay? Because I made a comment on Facebook, maybe when he died, about how terrible that movie is. I really dislike Say Anything.
Did he do that movie? I don't think he did. Was that...
Say Anything was John Hughes.
Okay. Growing up, I was always loved Weird Science. It was a movie that I had.
Oh, yeah.
I had it memorized. Looking back at it now, it's out of... all four of his main films, that'd be one of my least favorite.
By the way, Say Anything, Cameron Crowe directed the movie.
Cameron Crowe. Thank you for
But John Hughes wrote it, right?
Cameron Crowe also wrote it.
Oh, never mind then. Oh, it's Some Kind of Wonderful. That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh,
never mind.
But that's Eric Stoltz. But I'm kind of with Jared. I like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I also have a huge soft spot in my heart for Christmas Vacation. Written by John, who's not directed, but
was it really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I think he
did all of the.
I think he wrote every single theatrical.
Well,
Vacation,
even though Vegas Vacation.
I believe he wrote Vegas Vacation too.
Not European Vacation
and European Vacation.
Wow, that's unfortunate.
I mean, really, there's only two vacation movies you need to worry about, but Christmas Vacation kind of had that heart, and I think it captured the Griswolds and the spirit that Adam cannot relate to, but good movie nonetheless. Would you agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, I remember watching it with my friend who laughed for about 10 minutes straight during the scene where he greases up the sled.
He just sits on it and explodes. Poosh. Is your mom sitting there right now, Adam? I'm curious. Is she?
She's downstairs. Also, you know what? I remember I saw the Wizard and Christmas Vacation together the same day for a birthday. I always thought it was weird that Christmas Vacation came out in August, but it did.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Did it?
The Wizard being the Fred Savage opus, right?
You mean the Nintendo opus.
Nintendo
co-starring
opus.
Co-starring Fred Savage.
Starring Mario, co-starring Fred Savage. Well, Adam, thanks for taking the time to pull that story for me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
What else we got in the old news hopper?
So the other story you forced upon me.
What? Get off my back.
So, AMC, known recently for Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and also including K-9 as a American movie classic, has signed up Shawshank Redemption director Frank Darabont to be the showrunner for The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is Robert Kirkman, who's also the creator of Invincible, the comic. It's a comic book about zombies.
It's pretty much a realistic, I guess, depiction of
zombies.
Of the world, how the world would react if The Walking Dead covered the Earth, I think.
My concern with this is centered mostly around Jericho and how, you know, they turned Jericho, which I thought was a cool premise, just became melodrama for the first, you know, most of the first season until I've been told it gets into an actual, you know, story about stuff.
Any show like this that you do that's has some sort of outlandish premise or end of the world, I think you have to play the people in it straight. You have to make them behave and act like you think someone would actually act in a situation like that, rather than, you know, the problem with Jericho is that, you know, they have this nuclear explosion, but then they would cover the people, the emotional aspect, and they'd be bathed in beautiful sunlight, and
they'd be cheating on one another.
They'd be involved in the same drama that you would have if you were living in real life and you were in Melrose Place or something like that. I think this movie needs... I don't think that that goes away. The human condition doesn't go away in a situation like this, but I think that you have to be realistic on how people would behave. Adam, this The Walking Dead and my recent completion of the zombie awesome super zombie book, World War Z, has inspired me to have... I think we're going to do a zombie theme show at some point here on The Scope. But I need
Can we do it during the same stupid weekend as the zombie bar crawl in Minneapolis?
If you want to. But I think
is that taking zombieism too far?
I think it is.
Yes.
But there's actually a zombie bar in Northeast now.
Yeah, that's brand new.
So they're going to love that.
But
it's owned by the same lady that owns Psycho Susie's.
Yeah.
Adam, and even Mike, if you want to, if I could convince you guys to either go out and buy or check out from the library the book World War Z for our big zombie show, can I get you guys to commit to that? Because I think that you'll absolutely love that book. Jared's read it. He read it first.
Yeah, I'm a little bit... I should reacquaint myself with it a little bit. But yeah, it's a fantastic read.
Is there an audiobook version of it?
There is, and it's critically acclaimed. They've got a lot of famous people in it, stuff like that, reading it.
Then sure, I'll download that.
Yeah, give it a listen, because I think you'd probably really buy it.
I mean, buy it.
Yep. Oops. And Mike, we know you love the printed word, so you should read that book. I highly recommend it.
Is there a picture book version?
There is one picture in the book. That's it.
Should we time our zombie show sometime around the release of Zombieland?
Yeah, when does that come out? Is that September?
I think so.
Yeah, we'll do we'll have a whole thing with zombies, Zombieland, the whole deal.
We could talk about Dead Set, which I finished. We could talk about it more, I guess. I don't know.
And Adam finished it as well. Okay, Adam, what's next on the agenda for the news?
So one of the big things in the news lately has been healthcare and everything. So in an editorial on July 31st, Investor's Business Daily warned of end-of-life counseling in healthcare, or death panels, as Sarah Palin calls them, in healthcare reform by saying, quote, people like Stephen Hawking wouldn't have a chance in such a system. And so here's the actual quote from IBD. People such as scientist Stephen Hawking wouldn't have a chance in the UK, where National Health Service would say the life of this brilliant man, because of his physical handicaps, is essentially worthless. So this is funny on a number of levels. A, because Stephen Hawking actually lives in England.
I believe he was born there as well, and is a citizen of the country.
And was born there, exactly. So he kind of gave his two cents about it. So, in fact, Professor Hawking lives in England, where he has been treated by their National Health Service, and by his own account, it has saved his life. His quote is, "I wouldn't be here today if it were not for the NHS, the National Health Service."
He wouldn't be able to cheat on his wife with his nurse if it wouldn't be for them.
I received a large amount of high-quality treatment without which I would not have survived.
But how did he really say it when he said it? I received a large amount of...
No, that's terrible.
To be fair, they were threatening to pull the plug on him when they asked for the quote. Yeah.
You know, I actually have an action figure of Stephen Hawking. Isn't that crazy?
Do you really?
There was a Simpson action figure made of Stephen Hawking. He's got like a super wheelchair that's got a helicopter propeller and stuff like that. So yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So since this has happened, since his he's rebutted it, rebutted. Sure, the Hawking reference.
Since he laid down the smackdown,
took a stand against it.
I laid down the smack.
The Hawking reference in the IBD editorial has been removed, with this correction added. Quote, this version corrects the original editorial, which implied that physicist Stephen Hawking, a professor of the University of Cambridge, did not live in the UK. They did not acknowledge that the NHS has kept Hawking alive there. So,
nice. I frankly think there are a few people in America that might serve to be judged by a death panel, like half of our celebutards out there.
Wow, it's harsh.
That's what I say.
So moving Perez on Hilton. To something not as sad, I guess, or sad for some console owners. The Xbox 360 was found to be the most active console amongst U.S. gamers. And so what they looked at was the number of people that actually own each console, and then how often they were played in that household over the last 6 months. And so like in the active user base, it's about 12% for the Xbox 360. You might wonder where the Wii is. Well, the Wii has the lowest active user base over the last 6 months in the U.S., hovering right around 6%.
I
guess makes sense because everyone owns it.
Yeah.
Well, like everyone owns it,
Mike, I don't own it. I won't buy one either.
Mike, you own a Wii. When's the last time you played it?
Let's see. The last time I played my Wii.
Besides last night.
It was actually about a week ago.
Wow.
Wow. See, I probably haven't fired her up in about 4 months, would be my guess. Although that Wii Sports Resort is looking promising.
Did you buy it?
I have not bought it.
You probably should.
I probably.
But then you're going to be stuck spending a bunch on all the Motion Plus things.
I'd probably only buy one more motion sensor.
I'm surprised that the PlayStation 3 rated above the Wii in that, if I heard that correctly.
Yeah, I haven't fired mine up in a while either with that.
PS3 is second highest on that list, right around 10%.
What
about PS2? Is that on the list?
PS2 is on that list, right around 9.2%, kind of tied with the, I can't tell colors so well. yeah, this is too hard for me to see the color.
We get the point.
I think that, you know, it's sort of...
Oh, original Xbox.
That's really?
That's because, you know, of the 10 people that still have it, they probably play it all the time.
We all own an Xbox 360.
Mine is
here.
Hacked to play Super Nintendo games and other systems.
There you go.
That's what I play on it right now.
Adam, are you enjoying your 360 now that you're back in the world again?
I've only played it like for 2 minutes, but I really like 1 versus 100. I could probably just play that nonstop.
That is fun.
I played that for the first time.
Left 4 Dead is always a winner for me. Mike and I played a bunch of Street Fighter 4 last weekend. That was fun.
It's true.
I should find out what games you guys have so that I can get those and then we can have lots of gay fun.
Totally. Anything else?
Hey, can you change your gamer tag? Or is that
you have to pay for that. You can do it, but you have to pay for it.
Okay. So one more newsy news story. Glenn Beck has been having some financial issues for his show as of late after calling Barack Obama a racist and saying that healthcare was a secretive plot for backdoor reparations. Numerous companies have stopped advertising on his show. So the site colorofchange.org, it's some pro-black racist site. It's not really.
Adam likes to throw out something like that and then back away from it immediately.
Adam really pushing
for the Scope sponsors.
I know. We're going to be down to -6 sponsors.
they started a letter writing campaign to the advertisers of Glenn Beck's show. So far. Advertisers that have pulled out: Lawyers.com, Procter & Gamble, Progressive Auto Insurance, SC Johnson, Geico, Men's Warehouse, Sargento, ConAgra, Roche, the Sanofi Aventis, and Radio Shack, or The Shack, have all since last Thursday pulled out of advertising on his show. This is how advertisers always do it, though. It's like, you know, they make a big deal out of it, and then they'll probably re-sign up whenever the next quarter starts or whatever, but whatever. I guess that's good news.
Nice.
Yep. Brad Pitt is pretending to run for the mayor of New Orleans.
He is.
Yeah.
I thought he lived in France.
He's been spending a lot of time down in the bayou.
Yeah. He started a foundation to help try to rebuild the Ninth Ward, which is the most heavily hit area of New Orleans. And they've rebuilt 15 homes so far, and he says by next year they'll be up to 150 homes rebuilt for free. And they're all green homes that have like $20 utility bills because of, I don't know, stuff. Anyway, people in the city started printing up Brad Pitt for mayor shirts, and so he was interviewed on the Today Show, and you know, he was very awestruck about it. But Ann Curry asked him what his platform was, and he was like, yeah, I'm running on the gay marriage, no religion, legalization and taxation of marijuana platform. I have no chance. So I thought that was kind of a cute Brad Pitt story. And
it is cute.
Everyone should be a big Brad Pitt fan. And finally, Reno 911 was canceled by Comedy Central.
Oh. Are you sad about that?
I am. I have always liked that show.
I've never seen it.
So right when the state gets their due and they finally get their DVDs released, half the cast of the state, since they're all on Reno 911, lose their job.
Viacom's deadly sick plan to bring them all down. Well, thank you for the news, Adam. You did a great job halfway across the country.
You're very welcome.
Jared, I think that leads us to our next part of Under the Scope. That would be our reviews.
Yeah, okay.
We've got two films, and keeping up with the G.I. Joe theme, the first movie would be G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. Off to you, Adam. You have the text, correct?
Oh, yes,
you're
I
not,
do.
I can read it.
Nope, I got it right here.
Okay.
G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra is a 2009 American live-action film adaptation of the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero toy franchise. The film is directed by Stephen Sommers, who also directed the Mummy franchise, produced by Lorenzo De Bonaventura, and co-written by Stuart Beatty, based on a really 1998 screenplay by John Paul Kay. G.I. Joe features an ensemble cast based on the various characters of the franchise. The story follows two American soldiers, Duke and Ripcord, who join the G.I. Joe team after being attacked by Cobra troops. And our only clip in Grand Scope tradition is a really long, boisterous action scene, which makes sense because that's what most of the movie is. Anyway, Scope listeners, use your imagination on this one. Storm Shadow and the Baroness are in an SUV screaming through a city in the city streets of Paris. Snake Eyes is hanging onto the truck. Duke and Ripcord, this sounds great, are chasing them while wearing the controversial accelerator suits. All the while, things are being smashed and exploding. Enjoy.
Hear that, Mike?
I want the warheads ready to launch in 1 hour.
When I'm finished,
this world will never forget.
How much of this you want to actually play?
They will talk at the end of it.
We have never faced a threat like this. A team is being assembled. They are the best operatives in the world. When all else fails, we don't.
Okay, you can pat it out.
I want in.
Standing in front of you.
All right, Adam, keep reading. All right.
G.I. Joe. The Rise of Cobra opened last week to terrible reviews and a solid box office. Inevitable sequel is coming, but was the first one worthy enough to warrant it? Does it matter? Let's find out now.
Thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So the three of us here have seen the film. I'm going to toss it right over to Mike. He, like I said, is the expert. He has a lot of opinions on a lot of things, but a lot of opinions on this movie. Mike, what do you say?
Well, having seen some of the previews and hearing a lot about this movie during production, my expectations couldn't have been much lower. So I was pleasantly surprised that it was almost mediocre.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't think it was overly faithful to the comic or the cartoon series. I wasn't expecting it to be.
No.
Was it a good movie? Not really. Was it absolutely horrendous? No, not quite that bad either.
Mm-hmm.
It even had moments where it felt a little like G.I. Joe.
Exactly. Boy, I think Mike's right on the money, Jared.
Yeah.
Mike was asking himself questions, though. That's an unfair interview.
Yeah.
Will
you answer your own questions, Mike?
Will I answer my own questions?
I am the guest as well.
Yeah.
See, I mean, I agree with you. I think that as I was watching the movie, sometimes the essence of G.I. Joe was there. It happened less than I was hoping for. I was hoping that, yeah, they could change it because they've had many iterations of the G.I. Joe Real American Hero characters in a number of different sources. And, you know, for the most part, they kind of get the basic archetypes of who these characters are. And they were there sometimes in spirit. Sometimes it was just completely ignored and they went off on their own thing. So that was a little bit disappointing. I think that the action scenes, even though some of the stuff they fought with, like the accelerator suits, which were very lame, should have never been there. Even the vehicle designs weren't very good. But some of the action scenes felt like they were staged correctly, and they kept me engaged.
Sure.
But I think that the main problem with this movie for me, beyond it completely ignoring most of what G.I. Joe is it falls into a lot of the stereotypes that these type of movies often have, and one of them is that everybody has to be related in some way to make the plot progress. So, you know, we talked about Cobra Commander in the comic book, how he really didn't have that much relationship to G.I. Joe. In this one, he is the brother of the new G.I. Joe guy, or the brother of the sister who was engaged to the new G.I. Joe guy, and she turned bad. I mean, it was all very interconnected, and it just seemed really forced. And you know, sometimes you can just have a bad guy that's bad.
Yeah.
You know, you can, their motivation can be that they're evil, and they don't need to know someone on the Joe team to do what they're doing. They're just assholes, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that really bugged me. As I said, I think the vehicle design sucked overall. The acting was okay to bad. Snake Eyes in general wasn't as cool as he should have been.
A little top heavy,
very bulky on the top. He's got these little cargo pants on the bottom. He's got a mouth on his costume.
I'm not bothered by the pants. The mouth, really? I hate, though.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed a little short. He didn't seem as ninja-like to me. Jared, you were talking.
He seemed like an ape.
Yeah. I didn't like the costumes in general. I know that they're this team of, they're not American, but this team of soldiers, so a lot of times they have to have the same fatigues and stuff like that. But it would have been cool if they could have given them their own special look based on what their specialty was. And it didn't have that. Yeah. And instead, they dressed them up as robots and looks like UN peacekeeping. Their camels would look like to me. And I think they probably changed too many things for me to be really excited about it. Better than Transformers, though. Jared, what do you think?
I agree with everything you're saying. The CG was terrible. You would think with the money they spent on it that they could have gotten better CG. We saw better CG in the next film we're going to review by far, and I know they spent less money on it.
Oh, like $100 million less probably to make that film.
So the CG was terrible, gaping plot holes, terrible dialogue. Yet, for the most part, I wasn't bored. And I was entertained by some of the set pieces. And you know, so it doesn't get above mediocre, but again, like you said, it was better than Transformers, both Transformers films.
When we walked out of Transformers 2, you had a visible look of disgust on your face.
Shane, I was talking through the film. I was making remarks at the screen, and generally I don't do that.
No.
But I was so angry at that movie. G.I. Joe was not quite the same. No, I mean, it is what it is. And there'll be a sequel, and we'll be disappointed about that too, I'm sure. But
that's what I hoped for when Transformers came out and it was so successful. I was really hoping that they would take the issues that people had with it, change them for the sequel, and make a better film. Instead, they did the opposite of that. I'm hoping with G.I. Joe they can do some of those things as well. Listen to the complaints, change it, get rid of the suits. You know, give Cobra some power to completely destroy the suits, and then they don't have to wear them. And give Cobra a better look in general for the entire organization that's not so goofy and weird, clear plastic skulls. I just didn't like that.
Again, it's another adapted film where there is this giant amount of source material from which you can draw. And there's a lot of goofy shit in there too.
Yes.
But there's some good stuff. I mean, there's good character design. There's things you can work on and tweak and you can make them reminiscent of what you're adapting. You don't have to just like pull in things from nowhere.
Yeah. Well,
and that's partially why I was
Don't work so hard.
Yeah.
It's there for you. You don't have to work so hard.
Well, and they didn't work so hard. I mean, with so much character background and stories and explanation of how things came to be or why characters act a certain way, why on earth is everything based on nanotechnology?
Fucking
somebody's
nanotechnology.
Evil. Oh, it's nanotechnology.
Yeah,
basically, Nestor wears a mask. Nanotechnology.
Yeah. If you see something glowing green in a movie, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, and there's a lot of glowing green in this film.
Yeah. Yes.
So the sequel will come out, but I'm sure that if we had anything to say about it, it might not. Let's give this thing a score and then move on to our next film.
The Scope score is 1.5 stars.
So not very well reviewed. Better than Transformers. Let's go on to our second film, Adam. I've actually got the text here because this is kind of a last second thing, so I'm sorry you're going to be out of the loop on this. It is for the film District 9. Brand new, a lot of hype for this movie the last...
You're not allowed to do this. I'm the only person that has to read this text.
I'm sorry, Adam. So a lot of hype.
I won't allow it.
He won't do it. District 9, a 2009 science fiction film directed by Neil Blomkamp, a protege of super director Peter Jackson. District 9 is based on Neil's Alive in Joburg, a short film that has a lot of the same elements of District 9. People are wondering, what is this film all about? And we're going to try to do it as spoiler-free as possible so people don't freak out. 30 years ago, aliens made first contact with Earth over the skies of Johannesburg, South Africa. Humans waited for the hostile attack or the giant advances in technology. Neither came. In our first clip, mankind decides to enter the giant spaceship hovering over Johannesburg.
Now, to everyone's surprise, the ship didn't come to a stop over Manhattan or Washington or Chicago, but it instead coasted to a halt directly over the city of Johannesburg. The doors didn't open for 3 months. It just hovered there. Nobody could get in. And they eventually decided, after much deliberation, that the best thing to do would be to physically cut their way in.
We were on the verge of first contact. The whole world was watching.
Need some more light?
Expecting, I don't know, music from heaven and bright shining lights.
There's a lot of moisture in here. Oh my god.
Ooh, so they're entering the ship. So instead, they find that the aliens were actually refugees, the last survivors of their homeworld. The creatures were then set up in a makeshift home in South Africa's District 9 as the world's nations argued over what to do with them. Now, patience over the alien situation has run out. Our second clip features a human worker for a multinational United, a company set up to deal with the alien creatures now on planet Earth.
Hi, my name's Dubie Harber.
Dubie, how's
it? I'm working here for the MNU.
Hey, Duke.
We're here busy doing evictions today. We don't actually do the evictions. We just basically do the admin work behind the evictions. Mostly I'm in the office. It's very rare I'm in the field. I'm also help training new guys.
Okay, so now have a look. This area is clear now. All right? Everything clear. Area finished. Tick in that box.
Let's take a look in here. You know what this is, Butch?
No.
This is a cryogenic vault. Like a big fridge. See that? That's a prop. What happens, the Nigerians, they owe them money. They freeze them until somebody from their family can come pay for them. Get them out of there. He's not even dead. I've called in a retrieval team to come get rid of it. And they take it out and then they take it to HQ and sort that stuff out there.
And there we go.
That was some bonus stuff because that wasn't in the movie.
Was not in the movie. So yeah. So Jared and I are going to talk a little bit about this since Mike and Adam have not seen it. We'll try to be, as I said, as spoiler free as possible. Jared, I'll start with you. We just saw this movie an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
We walked out from a pretty much packed room. People were excited to see this, and I think overall attitudes were very positive.
You're judging the crowd?
I'm judging the crowd. People loved it.
I didn't get any read from the crowd at all.
I was eavesdropping as I was walking out.
You picking any pockets too?
Yes, I was.
Lunch is on chain.
I've got tons of driver's license and ATM cards. Jared, did you like this film?
I liked it quite a bit. Although I had some difficulty adjusting to the style of how it was shot initially. The first 20-30 minutes of the film is shot very documentary style. A lot of mix and match of handheld cameras, security camera footage, a lot of text overlays on screen. And I don't know if it was the morning or if it was just it just takes some time to adjust to that style. But I was having a hard time with it. But once the real narrative started up, it was very, very entertaining. The CG, as I mentioned, is exceptional in this film. The CG characters feel like they have mass, like they exist in this world and are sharing the frame with the human actors. And obviously the mechanical stuff, there should be no excuse for mechanical CG elements to
look
fake at all at this day and age. Everything should look completely integrated. And it did. I don't know. I thought the acting was really, really great overall. I got to think that whoever pulled the plug on the Halo film with this crew is stupid. I know they didn't know what they were getting, but I was watching this movie going, "Wow, this guy could have made a killer Halo film. It would have been awesome."
There's a little bit of Halo overtones to this as you're watching it, crossover, and
oh yeah, I easily could have seen the Covenant and
absolutely, and. It takes place in South Africa, so there's not, I don't think there's any American or even British people in this. So there's no. an
So like G.I. Joe.
So
yeah, exactly.
Very nice. So it takes a little bit of time to get used to that accent. But I thought it was. I thought this was really a fascinating, smart take on a science fiction type film, and I was impressed all the way through. I was telling Jared that my only main complaint on this is the main character who we follow his journey through. He's a worker for the MNN. I think that he was played a little too earnestly and maybe dopey at the beginning. I mean, he didn't feel quite as realistic to me. It almost felt like a stereotype of a bumbling idiot rather than a true bumbling
idiot.
And
I kind of disagree with that, because I think playing him that way initially makes his journey more remarkable. But that's my opinion.
That's Jared's take. But I don't think that it takes away from anything that happens past the first 20 minutes of the movie. And I think the guy that played the main character, Wilkes, is ridiculously good for someone who's never really acted before. And I think you buy into it completely. I think you buy into everyone who's acting in that film.
Yeah.
It just feels real. And the fact that they merged real footage of South Africa, Johannesburg, things that are happening, these camps and, you know, people, and just the destruction that is around that city, they merge it together with some of these some of this more extraordinary alien type stuff it really makes it feel like a real piece.
It does what good science fiction does, and that is it takes fiction and uses
science.
No. It infuses it with a social allegory that is relevant to our own current society, and it did exactly that. I mean, I'm not that aware of what's going on or what has happened in the past in South Africa, other than, you know, just real high level information.
Sure.
But it kind of, you know, you definitely can tell that this relates to things that have happened in their past there,
culturally significant for them.
And I was amazed at how empathetic they could make these aliens. I mean, they speak entirely in subtitles, and they're completely CG, and yet you feel genuine emotion towards these creatures at some point in the film. So
yeah, we're not giving it away, Mike. There are aliens in this film. Totally. So, Jared, would you go on a limb and say this is your favorite movie of the summer so far?
I still like Star Trek better, I think, just because of the nature of it, but
sure,
this would easily be second.
This is a high-quality film. I agree with you. Let's give this thing a score and not risk spoiling any of it.
The Scoop score is 3.5 stars.
So right up there with some of the best movies of the summer, Star Trek, it's good.
It's not even as a science fiction film. It's good cinema, period.
Yep.
It should be seen by everyone.
You should go see this thing. And
although it's very, very violent.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. You would maybe... I was surprised Jared was not, but it is one of the most violent movies I've seen in quite a long time. And it pulls no punches. So it earns every rated R, whatever they get, criteria that you possibly could imagine. So
was there smoking? I'm not sure if there was smoking.
I don't know if there was smoking or not.
Say it didn't earn that one then.
So Earl will be very angry about that. So that leaves us with a little bit of a problem, Adam. Our last bit of the day usually is coming soon. And I don't know if you have the coming soon stuff, do you? Did I send that to you?
Yeah.
I did. All right. I forgot if I did. So please, Adam, let us know what's coming soon.
Did you guys give that a score?
3.5 stars.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I just didn't hear the.
Were you grabbing a sandwich or something?
A sandwich?
Yes.
All right. Go do it. What do we got?
Trying to figure out how I can get the audiobook that I just downloaded, maybe not legally, onto my iPod. I don't think that's possible.
Doesn't it work in iTunes? You can't just drag it over?
Well, no, because I use my home computer as my.
Right.
I see.
Syncing is not as good.
Yeah.
All right. So, coming soon, music. August 18th, that is this coming Tuesday. Brendan Benson, I don't know who that is. Lil Wayne, and his new pseudo-rock album. It's not really a rock album, though, but that's what people keep calling it. Third Eye Blind, really? And Sean Paul.
So four buyers for you right there, Adam.
Yes, I've pre-ordered them.
Hypothetical buyers.
Hypothetical buyers. Right.
August 25th, Arctic Monkeys have a new album coming out. I've only heard the one track that they keep playing on the current, but I like it. Imogene Heap, that singer that is featured on that one Grey's Anatomy song that is terrible. Collective Soul has a new album coming out. And Shonen Knife. Is that some hip band that I just don't know of?
No, they've been around for a while.
Who?
Shonen Knife?
Oh, yeah, they've been around for ages.
Never heard of them.
They have Japanese. An album called
J-pop. I don't know if it's pop.
No.
K-pop.
K-pop.
That's Korean pop.
Oh, I did not know that.
All right, movies. August 21st, Inglourious Basterds and Shorts comes out. Inglourious Basterds being the latest from Quentin Tarantino. You may have heard of him before. I don't know. I don't want to speak for anyone in the room, so let's just leave it at that.
I love him, American Idol. He's always good on that show.
Crickets?
And you spelled Basterds wrong, which is funny.
No, that's how it's spelled.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is it spelled that way?
I don't know.
There's a reason for it. I don't remember, but it's spelled with an E.
Okay. And then August 28th, two horror movies. Final Destination, the reboot, I guess, but it's mostly a 3D movie. So it's in most 3D places and only some 2D places. I always thought that
2D in select theaters.
That's what it said in the trailer today.
Yes. I always thought that that movie was funny because, like I don't understand why death has these rules that it has to play by.
Yeah.
You know, like when it can kill and what. Oh, are you guys still there?
We're here.
Yeah.
That could have been bad. anyway, it has you can beat death, and it's like, this doesn't make any sense. Why can't death just kill you?
That's what I say.
And Halloween 2.
So we're really kicking out the super high quality movies the last week of summer.
Yes. Kicking them out is the correct way of looking at it.
Barfing them up.
Shoveling them out.
DVDs, August 18th, The Last Starfighter, the 25th anniversary edition, Everybody Hates Chris, the complete series, and The Simpsons season 12. Are they still doing the character boxes?
Yeah.
Or is that
this particular character would be comic book guy.
Comic book guy, mm-hmm. I see. August 25th, Adventureland, House season 5, and Scrubs season 8. Still going with Scrubs. All right.
Yeah. And there'll be a season 9 next year, Adam.
Yes. Great.
He's very
video games for the week of August 16th. We've got Wolfenstein 3D for the PS3 and 360. And I believe there is a PC release coming as well for that. That is the reboot of the Wolfenstein franchise for the third time.
They just keep rebooting.
I know. Though this one, I guess, it might actually be a reboot of the series where when they last brought it back 3 or 4 years ago, maybe it was supposed to still be a sequel.
Yeah.
And Raven Squad, Operation Hidden Danger for the 360. So that's a funny sounding name.
It is.
I don't know if this is common or if I've just been on the console gaming thing for a long time, but like depending on where you pre-order Wolfenstein from, you get a different extra.
Yeah, they're doing that with a lot of things now. Beatles Rock Band has a lot of different options. So did Madden. Modern Warfare 2, same deal.
It's dumb.
It is dumb.
August 23rd, we've got Batman Arkham Asylum, which I pre-ordered after playing the demo, so that was a lot of fun.
You like the demo?
Yeah, well, I really like Splinter Cell type games, and mm-hmm. it was very much Splinter Cell with Batman.
Very cool.
Harvest Moon and Metroid Prime Trilogy for the Wii.
Yeah, they're repackaging all the Metroid games on the last couple consoles and putting them together into one big game.
Great.
Very exciting. Okay. Is that it, Adam?
That's it.
So coming soon, Jared, is OVA.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Under the scope.
It's that time of the show.
What happens in this time?
We look back and find out what people are saying about us. And Jared takes care of that business.
We got a couple of comments on the website. Nice. Cyrus writes to say, Jared, you should definitely check out Weeds. It's a pretty decent comedy. Well worth the Netflix stream. I did check it out, Cyrus. I've watched the first 2 seasons, in fact, on streaming, and it is a good show, as you say. Shane, my friend, had cats that fought all night, so I feel your pain. Take care, Scopies. Great show.
Of course it is. Thank you, Cyrus.
Zach also writes in, I agree with Cyrus. Even though it starts to decline after the third season, Weeds is still a hilarious show. I found it hilarious at times. I guess I got more into the characters and didn't find it as a super funny show, but it's still definitely entertaining. And finally, after weeks of not having watched it, I don't have the theme song in my head anymore.
Who does the theme song?
It's a song called Little Boxes, like a well-known like 60s folk song. The first season was all the original recording. I forget who does it. Second season was mostly bands covering it.
Oh.
I believe the third season continues that tradition, and then they change it for the fourth season.
So do they just have a different band every show cover it?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So at least you got different versions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like Third Eye Blind. No. Death Cab for Cutie did one. I don't know. There's a bunch of bands.
Gotcha.
I also believe that Entourage this season was great and should win the Emmy for comedy. Sorry, wow. Shane. You just said you haven't been watching this last season, so how would you even
know? I think he was talking about last season, the season you just watched.
Oh, I suppose. Season 5.
Yeah. I don't agree with that.
I don't. 5 is probably my least favorite of all of them so far.
But that's
all right. I just finished it last night, so I guess we have to disagree with Zach.
That's okay, Zach.
The show's all about disagreeing, so really, you've actually contributed to the show by being controversial.
We rarely agree on anything.
If you'd like to be controversial, you can write in at comments@thescopeshow.com. You can call the voicemail line at 646-495-9201, extension 70055. I know I teased that we might get a new voicemail number that was better. I've just been too lazy to do anything about that.
Hey, you know what we should do? We should put our gamer tags on the site or at the end of our show, too.
You think so? We could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll do that.
We'll throw that up there.
Mine's easy.
Let me possibly change mine in first.
Well, okay. you let us know, and then we'll fire it up. We'll throw something on the website.
You don't want to use Love Muffin anymore?
Sexy.
Great. Now I'm going to get so many friend requests coming to Love Muffin. Thanks a lot.
You can join our Facebook page over on the Facebook. Kind of stagnated at about 43 fans there. So if anyone is on Facebook wants to be our fan, we do kind of publish some stuff there that's unique. I don't know if it's that entertaining, but it's another portal to connect with us.
Are you our friend on our fan on Facebook, Mike?
You know, I don't think I am.
Well, get to it.
I'll make sure I do that.
I don't think I am.
No, you're not, Adam.
Yeah, he is. I made him an admin, I'm pretty sure. Damn. We're also on the Twitters, The Scope Show. That's our name on Twitter. And I've been posting. Shane hasn't really done anything. Adam definitely hasn't done anything. He even ignores what Twitter
is
anymore.
Every once in a while, I do it.
I've been posting what I call Twitter reviews on there. For stuff that I've been watching and listening to, whatever. So look to Twitter for that if you're interested in our quick 140 characters or less reviews of entertainment properties.
I posted this week of The Waking Dead or Walking Dead.
I'm talking about reviews, though. There's a lot of things you could review quickly and throw up there. And
I'll do that.
Okay.
I will do that.
I would appreciate it if you would. Contribute.
I will contribute. Adam, we don't expect anything from you.
Right.
Thank you.
We're always looking for reviews in iTunes. iTunes is the foremost directory of podcasts, and for us to get some notoriety and more fans, we need to have activity in there. And so it really helps if you guys take the time to go into iTunes if you have an account and leave a review, leave a comment. Hopefully we'll get noticed and maybe make it to their recommended podcast under comedy. That'd be great.
That would be super.
That's what I have.
Very nice. Programming note for next show. As you all know, I do go on my summer vacation up to the North Shore. And in previous years, I've constructed a North Shore Super Trivia. And this year will be no exception. It was kind of a last-minute thing. But Adam, I hope you're in studio next time because we will have a North Shore Trivia Contest. I'm very excited about it.
I think we've proven that Adam doesn't actually need to be in studio.
He doesn't need to be here. But I just love to look at his beautiful face.
Thank goodness.
Mike, I want to thank you for being here on the show today. You added a lot to the G.I. Joe mythos. I hope it was fun for you.
It was. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And Jared, thank you for feverishly taking care of all the technical aspects as you do every single time we do
the show.
I had
a team of attendants mopping my brow as I assembled everything.
Very nice. And it was a pleasure to see the movie with you today. Too bad Mike couldn't have come with.
Well, we had plenty of company.
I didn't want to be a third wheel.
You definitely would have been if you would have went there. I don't know where we would have sat. So guess what, guys? As far as I know, this was actually episode 78 of The Scope.
Yes.
North Shore Trivia Part 3, 79, comes up in 2 weeks. We'll see you then.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
646-495-9201, extension 70055.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying,
Buenos dias.
Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.